A new era of power has arrived with the Alienware Area 51 gaming laptops, intentionally engineered to push more power to the CPU and GPU for maximum performance. Combined with Intel Core Ultra 9 processors, merging CPU, NPU, and integrated GPU into one AI-optimized chip, it delivers fast, smart, and seamless performance across everything you do. And with the new cryo chamber design, airflow is focused exactly where it's needed most. Fused with Alienware's enhanced thermal solutions, it creates a higher power output without raising noise levels, allowing you to play with confidence even during the most demanding marathon gaming sessions. So no matter what you're playing, Alienware ensures every game runs precisely as its developers intended. A new era of power is here. All you have to do is take it. Discover Area 51 today at www.alienware.com/area-51laptops.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
This week on Retronauts, we talk about the super soldier who's afraid of Draculas. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I'm your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today we're talking about Metal Gear Solid Delta Snake Eater, the very new and very reverent remake of the original 2004 game. So there's been a whole lot of controversy over this re-release. So in this episode, we're going to discuss what it adds to the Metal Gear Solid 3 experience and then decide if this remake needs to exist. We have that power on this podcast. And joining me today are two massive Metal Gear fans. Who is here with me on Retronauts today?
Brendan James, glad to be here.
And who else do we have?
Maddie, oh, that's Raspberry. Kept you waiting, huh?
Thank you. I was waiting for someone to either imitate Snake or quote him. By the way, Brendan, I hope he wills it out on this podcast. Very good Snolic Steak impression.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, I won't be doing one then.
My throat's a little sore today, so it'll probably be even better if I end up doing it.
If you're willing to risk your health. But yes, Maddie, of course, brilliant Metal Gear artist, does a ton of comics. Those are popping off online. You probably see Maddie in your feed, even if you're not sure who she is or if you've never heard her before. Meanwhile, Brendan, you do the political podcast Blowback, and currently you are doing a podcast with Felix Biederman of Chapo Trap House on the Chapo Trap House Patreon about the Metal Gear Solid series.
That's right. We're having a lot of fun. We're going through all of the main entries in the series with some fun, but hopefully some insight and some things that maybe haven't been said 100 times before about these great games.
Yes, they're very good and very long. So if you have not had your fill of Metal Gear discussion quite yet, and I certainly haven't, please steer yourself towards those. I've been having a lot of fun with those. And also, I'm holding off on listening to your Snake Eater episode until I record this one. I think that's what I'm doing immediately after this one while I make dinner, is starting that what I assume is like a 3 or 4 hour podcast.
I'm sorry for 3 or 4 hours of me in your ear today, uninterrupted, it sounds like, but this is your choice, your life.
It will be a delight, Brendan.
Thank you.
So before I go on any further, I want to know how each of you are approaching Metal Gear Solid 3. What are your respective Metal Gear Solid 3 experiences? Let's start with Brendan.
Well, I came to this series a bit later than most. I think probably later than both of you, because I didn't really play video games at all after I was a kid for many years. And then during COVID, I sort of said, oh, well, if I'm going to regress, you know, during lockdown, it might as well be now. And I bought an Xbox, Xbox One, and I started playing these games. And the first one I started with was Snake Eater. And it was a little tricky at first. I think I abandoned it twice, mostly because the cutscenes were 45 minutes long, and I wasn't used to that. And I didn't think I wanted to wait that long before playing a game, and so I sort of had a brush with a totally different life, but then I for some reason did commit to it on the third time and immediately was hooked, and I was just totally charmed and in love with all of the quirks of the game. I got over the controls pretty quickly. I'm sure we'll talk about the controls, the control factor with Delta versus the original today. And I just kind of yeah, fell in love with the world of the game and foolishly played them in story order after that, rather than the proper order. But that was kind of an interesting experience in and of itself. And of course, I've replayed them since, and it's interesting to play them in the, you know, release order, having started a different way. So yeah, it was probably one of the most fun times I've ever had playing a game, and it led to my love of the series overall.
And based on what I know about you, Maddie, you and Brendan seem to be both Metal Gear Solid converts in recent years.
Yeah, I even more recently, 2022 is when I first played Metal Gear Solid. I originally was going to play through the Kingdom Hearts series, and I really hated the first one. And so I was like, I'm going to play something different. And the reason I never got into Metal Gear was I don't like stealth games. And I thought it was more along the lines of something like Splinter Cell, where it's like a very just kind of military, straightforward, like stealth game. But I was like, whatever, I'll play the first one. So I played Metal Gear Solid 1, and it blew me away. Just even, you know, playing it over 20 years after it first released, the kind of really creative things it did with the limited technology, and just the really in-depth characters, the weird characters. It took me a while to get through MGS1. MGS2 was like when I totally fell in. I played through that in a week. I just absolutely fell in love with everything. It was so campy and so weird. And then I played through in basically release order. After I played Snake Eater, I went back and played like the MSX games. I played through everything at this point. I played through Acid. I played through Peace Walker, etc. And yeah, when I played through Snake Eater, I played the PS2 subsistence version, which I'm sure we'll get to, like a lot of the additional things that it had that they brought back for Delta. And yeah, it's just, that was when like my comics really started blowing up, because I was kind of making little doodles as I went through MGS1 and 2. And then as I got to 3, obviously it's the most popular one in the series, and my comics I was doing about it, because it is like, it's really silly when you're playing it, right? Like, you kind of suck, and so it adds a lot of funny stuff. The characters in it are ridiculous. And yeah, I was just like, and it was during the time where there was no Metal Gear. Like, they hadn't announced this new collection they did of the old games. They hadn't announced Delta. And so I think people were really excited to see like a new Metal Gear person like making a bunch of new art about it. And so it just, from there, it just kind of kept going. And I'm a crazy Metal Gear person now.
It's very strange we haven't had you on to talk about Metal Gear yet. But I guess there's only so much Metal Gear to talk about. And this is a good excuse.
I mean, it might be dangerous because this might end up as a 10-hour podcast.
Let's
find
out.
To me. Believe me, Felix and I've been disgusted looking at the time code during our recordings.
I feel really bad because it's like if I'm at like a game convention, if I'm at PAX or something and Metal Gear comes up, like something switches in me and I just like start talking. And I'm like, and then I like realize like after 10 minutes, I'm like, I'm so sorry. I've just been like yapping at you for the past 10 minutes.
Well, this remake has really rekindled my love of Metal Gear Solid, because I was an OG Metal Gear Solid 3 player and an OG Metal Gear Solid 1 player, and I went through all of the games in release order. So, love Metal Gear Solid 1. I was working at a game store when Metal Gear Solid 2 came out. Because I bought the GameCube, I had very little money, so I was holding off on buying that, and I saw what happened. Everyone bought it on the Friday it came out. And everyone brought it back on the Monday afterwards, very angry at the guy at the game store who did nothing to them. I didn't program the game, so I was experiencing the hatred for Metal Gear Solid 2 firsthand. I played it. I like what it was doing. But I remember being excited for 3 and having to get friends on board, convincing them, no, look, they're doing things different. You are presumably going to play as a kind of Snake. It's not going to be as much of a mind screw as the other game. It seems more traditional. And then I played and I fell in love with it immediately. And yes, I did play it in the original format without the behind the Snake camera, the user controlled camera that exists in every other format. I don't know how I did that. I'm afraid to go back and try that version of the game again, because it seems like I'm so spoiled today. But yeah, I went on to play Subsistence and play and review the HD collection. And now here I am at Delta and, you know, very happy with how this remake turned out. And we'll eventually talk about it. But yeah, it's a great time to be a Metal Gear fan because, as Maddie was saying, we were in a gulf of nothing Metal Gear between, I guess, Metal Gear Survive and the Master Collection, which is not really a new game, but enough to get excited about. But now here is kind of a new game. So I see a lot more Metal Gear discussion than I have in like, geez, since 2015, I guess.
Yeah, which is nice. I mean, I think I might end up coming at this remake more critically than you, Bob. But one thing I do, really the only hard opinion I have on it is that I'm glad it will get people into the series. And I'm glad that it's created buzz just by existing that will lead people to the other games. And, you know, that's an unmitigated positive for me.
Oh, sure. Yeah, if anything, and we'll talk about it, if anything, this remake is an olive branch to people who don't want to play a game made in 2004, even though this game is very much a game made in 2004. But again, we'll save that to the back half of this podcast. So I wanted to point out up front that I've already recorded an episode of Metal Gear Solid 3, and that was back in July of 2018. So check that out if you want a general Metal Gear Solid 3 informational podcast. It's episode 159. So I went over the history of the game and the story and the mechanics, and I'm sure those will come up just in talking about Delta. But for the sake of this podcast, it will be a discussion primarily about the 2025 remake of Metal Gear Solid 3. So we will talk about that. Before we do, I do want to cover all of the other Metal Gear Solid 3 re-releases in a non-tedious way. I'm hoping to make this non-tedious because as I was starting, I thought, oh, there's only a few of these. No, if you include Delta, this game has been released 7 times. And every time it's released, something new is taken away, something is added. And even if you don't agree it's the best Metal Gear game, you're wrong. But I think Konami internally thinks it is, which is why they presented it to us so many times. So for this next section, I'm just going to go over the core U.S. releases because there are so many different, you know, releases based on region. There's the European versions. There's the Japanese version. Everybody's crazy about the European Extreme mode. So we're just talking about the main differences between the U.S. releases. So, and I do want to start with the initial release, which was Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater. That came out in November of 2004, just for the PlayStation 2. So yes, this is the original release. And I just want to include it here because of the one big difference that's completely transformative compared to other versions of this game, and that is the camera. So the original release of this game had the same predetermined camera angles that the first Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 had. So you can kind of move the camera around just to survey things, but the camera's already locked into place, essentially, and that is how this game played. But then in future installments, you'll see they will change the camera system, but this is very much very different game in how you play it, just because of how limited your viewpoint is. Like in 1 and 2, you can snap into first-person view to see what's around you, but outside of that, you are locked down to what the designers decided is the best or most challenging way to view the game map. Now, because both of you came to this late, have either of you even tried to interface with this mode or try to play with this original camera system in place?
So I haven't. I wanted to comment, though, that it is a big mode that speedrunners tend to use. So that is one benefit of it. I guess it makes things more standardized. So speedrunners tend to choose that. At least my friend who speedruns MGS3, he always uses the original camera mode. But no, I've done Subsistence. I've tried the 3DS one, and then I've played Delta and the Master Collection remake or re-release.
Yeah, I know in Subsistence, if you click the right stick, it would just snap to the predetermined angle. I don't know if they did that in Delta because I never actually tried it in Delta.
I don't know what the control scheme is, but I know it's an option.
Okay. But yes, that's how they designed the game, and they are just a bit behind the times because things would be changing immediately after the release of this game in terms of the evolution of the third-person shooter and what we were expecting from that kind of a game. But just wanted to note here, this is when the original game came out, and I don't think anyone complained that Subsistence ruined the Metal Gear Solid experience. I was online at the time, and I saw people saying this only improved the Metal Gear Solid 3 experience. So let's talk about that release, which is the most substantial Metal Gear Solid 3 release. It's what every future version is based on. So this released in March of 2006, and this is the definitive way to play Snake Eater, or I guess at least it was before Delta came out. And the improved camera system is the most substantial addition here. So when the original game released, we were right on the brink of games like Resident Evil 4 and Gears of War, basically laying down the idea for a third-person action game, you are going to be behind the character. That is just how things will go. Metal Gear Solid 2, or sorry, 3 didn't have that hindsight, so they developed it with the 1 and 2 camera system in mind. But Subsistence changes this in a huge way by letting you move the camera wherever you want around Snake, and that was completely transformative in terms of how you played this game. And yes, like I said earlier, I did not see any discourse back in the aughts as to this camera system ruining the initial experience. So quietly, the biggest part of Metal Gear Solid Subsistence 3 release was the inclusion of the first English localizations of Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2, the original MSX games. Now, I believe these were ports of cell phone versions that were contemporary at the time, but I can't find that information anywhere. All I know is that they're not direct emulations of the MSX versions, but these were not made available before in English officially. And these, as Brendan and Maddie can tell you, I haven't played these yet, by the way. I feel like a real sinner here. But they are so essential to the entire Metal Gear series because they connect the back half of the series with the front half of the series. And then if you want to see where Big Boss ended up, well, check out Metal Gear 1 and 2. So I assume both of you played these official releases via Subsistence or Delta even. Or sorry, Master Collection is what includes these.
Mm-hmm. Or the HD Collection, yeah.
Yeah, I think HD Collection.
Oh, that too, yeah.
They're both great games, I think especially Metal Gear 2. Mm-hmm. That's up there for me. It's not technically an entry in the Solid series, but that's up there for me as a great Metal Gear game, like top five, beating out maybe like to some people like more obvious titles. So I'm really glad they did that. And if anyone hasn't played them, you know, your eyes will adjust to the 8 bits, but they're really fantastic. And if you are super into this series, they're pretty essential, even just from a story perspective. But Metal Gear 2 especially is just a great game. And it's as good as, you know, MGS 1, 2, or 3, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was surprised at how many just like features from Metal Gear Solid that were originally inputted into the game. Like it's surprising just like so many of the stealth things, the cardboard boxes, like so much of the what is like essential to Metal Gear Solid is in Metal Gear 2. Especially Metal Gear 1 is also very good. It is older. It is it was like MSX 1, I think, and then the second one was MSX 2. And it's more military. It's a much more like straightforward kind of military story. And then Metal Gear 2, you end up getting a little weirder, and then by Solid it starts going off the rails. But yeah, it's definitely worth playing.
Yeah, it's very crazy to think that so much of Metal Gear Solid 1, 2, and 3 are reliant on the initial two games, and they were not available in English until 2006. And we just had to take the game's appendices word for it that these events actually happened.
Or go through the weird NES versions.
Yes.
Yeah, there was that weird American version, and then the confusing not sequel that was released, Snake's Revenge. But it is funny how you have to essentially read a small book from that point forward if you want to know who the hell any of these people being referred to are, like Big Boss or, you know, Gray Fox and stuff like that. But yeah, it's great that they did that. And I think I had a blast when I finally got around to playing them.
Yeah, it was a bizarre experience in the late 90s to not know the Japanese history of Metal Gear. And Metal Gear Solid comes out. It's the biggest thing in gaming. Everyone's freaking out. And a lot of people are thinking, well, what? They made a sequel to this NES game that I guess some people played and liked. And now they sat on their hands for 10 years. And this is the result of that. Until we learn like what all the connective tissue was, it was a very strange experience to have Solid just come out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's crazy that Solid was such a big game, given that it's a sequel to an MSX game that, in America at least, almost no one had played. And the NES game doesn't even actually have a Metal Gear in it. So it's always surprising to me, but obviously the quality of the game itself explains why it was such a hit.
And it was on a demo disc, and I think that really helped it out, because a lot of people I talk to are like, oh yeah, I originally played it, the demo, and like that just like blew people's minds.
Yeah, that's where I first played it, the like official PlayStation Magazine demo, mm-hmm. and it lets you play up until the area with the Hind E
wow.
takes off. So just, yeah, like I guess the first two rooms, but they're pretty big rooms.
Oh, not the Hind E fight, just the,
right.
the when he says, Hind E. Yeah, there you go.
But it's still like, I think I certainly played that for like at least 3 to 5 hours, trying everything possible in this very new kind of game for me. So other things in Subsistence, we mentioned the new camera angle, we mentioned the first releases of Metal Gear 1 and 2. There was also the release of Metal Gear Online. So this is a multiplayer mode Konami kept trying to make work for the series. And the first proper release of this happened alongside the launch of Metal Gear Solid 4 in 2008. I guess technically that version of it was Metal Gear Online 2. Yeah. I have never played any version of this. I don't believe any of these are online today, and they are trying to do this again with a mode called Fox Hunt that is currently not available in Delta right now, as of this recording.
So I didn't play the Metal Gear Online versions. I know there was like a community that like kept Metal Gear Online accessible. The online version for Peace Walker is still available, because that's a like a peer-to-peer thing. So when I played through Peace Walker a few years ago on PS3, you can still do online with that, which is really cool. That's a different type of online. It has like a weird Monster Hunter collab where you fight a dragon that looks like Rex and stuff. But I don't have any experience with the original Metal Gear Online.
Yeah, I think ultimately the online features in Peace Walker and make for a better version of this than releasing an independent Metal Gear Online. But it was common for the time to have your multiplayer mode in these AAA games that cost a lot of money. So they were doing it here too. And weirdly enough, there's a lot of silly stuff in this mode because it is Metal Gear. There was a Rumble Roses crossover in the initial release of Metal Gear Online, so you can play as one of these notable, I assume, fake female wrestlers if you go back in time to whenever this was online, a very long time ago. So Metal Gear Online is part of this Subsistence release, and we also have Secret Theater. So these were goofy little bonus videos that depict these weird alternate versions of cutscenes you've already seen. In this release, they are pre-rendered videos, because I believe they're originally available online in Japan, but in the Delta release, they remake them all in the game engine, and they're amazing looking compared to what we had to see nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah, the Secret Theaters are great. I wanted to mention, too, the PS2 versions also were the only ones that had the Guy Savage dream, which is
yes.
the weird dream sequence if you save when you are in the jail cell and then turn your PS2 off and then come back to it. You have this weird, like, it looks like good Devil May Cry style game where you're this guy in this weird graveyard fighting zombies, and it's just like this bizarre playable dream sequence, and then you get some really fun codec calls after it as well, and that's something that was only PS2 until they brought it back for Delta. And also the Snake vs. Monkey, the Ape Escape crossover, was also the PS2 exclusive until they brought it back for Delta.
Right, yeah, it was in the original release, and then they added a bit more to the Subsistence release, like more maps, I guess, for Snake
yeah.
versus Monkey, something like that. Yeah, they expanded on it a little bit.
Yeah, and then Ape Escape 3 had its own Metal Gear, Mesaru Gear, like side mission in it as well. So they had some like cooperative thing going on, which was really fun.
So that was release 2 of this game. Now we're on release 3, which is the Metal Gear Solid HD Collection. A really good collection. I was around at the time in the games press. I did review this. It was essentially 5 Metal Gear games for essentially $60. And the best way to play this, or sorry, the most important thing about this is that it included a version of Peace Walker you can play on your television with a standard controller. And it made that game a lot more manageable. And I played a lot of Peace Walker on the PSP. I really love playing it on my HDTV. And unfortunately, this does omit a bunch of fun stuff from the subsistence release. So Snake vs. Monkey is out, Secret Theater is out, and Snake's Nightmare, which is that Guy Savage Nightmare Dream segment, that's also out. People did complain about that. But there's just so much happening in this one package that outside of that, there was very little to complain about. And these were okay ports for games that were very difficult to port.
Does this precede the Legacy Collection or
the Legacy Collection is one I didn't include, but I think, oh boy, I think Legacy Collection might have just been the original PS2 games made to run on a PS3 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it wasn't HD. I'm pretty sure.
Right. I don't think they were remakes. I think they might have just been the PS2 discs or just
got it
made to run on a PS3. I totally forgot about that one. So
I mean, I have it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one disc with Metal Gear Solid 1 is not even included. You had to enter like a code and get it online through the PS3 store. And then 2, 3, and Peace Walker are the disc, first disc. And then Metal Gear Solid 4 is the second disc. So yeah, I think you're right that they're just kind of ported into one disc.
Yeah, I totally forgot about this. I mean, technically there probably are 12 releases of Metal Gear Solid 3, and we're covering 7 of them.
Yeah. Because
I'm trying to inject as many more releases as possible.
No, thank you. Yeah, go ahead, Maddie.
The HD collection was different in Japan too, because it was only 2 and 3, and then they released Peace Walker HD separately. So you can add that to the list as well.
Yeah, Legacy Collection is also another release. So
I'm trying to fight your not tedious caveat from the top of the show.
Oh, this is going
to
be the first 2 hours of the podcast.
Yeah, so sorry, I'll shut up.
That's release number 3. Release number 4 is Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater 3D, a version I completely forgot about. So this came out in February of 2012 for the Nintendo 3DS. A remake nobody asked for, but it was made in the time between Peace Walker and Metal Gear Solid 5, so they needed some kind of Metal Gear product out there that wasn't just a port. And I guess this is a little more than a port, because it's essentially Metal Gear Solid 3 for the 3DS, but the way you play it in terms of how you control Snake and how CQC works, it feels a little more like Peace Walker, the very simplified CQC of that game.
It's almost Delta. You know, I mean, obviously, aside from the visual upgrade, you know, you have the over-the-shoulder Resident Evil style shooting, and you have crouch walking, which was not available in the original game.
The crouch walking, adding that to the 3DS version is such a weird thing, where it's like this, like downscaled in every other way, but it has crouch walking.
Yeah, they introduced crouch watching, which is now in Delta, and also, I didn't want to go over every minute difference because they're very hard to track, but I think maybe in this game you can move and shoot when you couldn't in the initial subsistence release. So like as time goes on, they're adding more of these modern features that will end up in future releases of the game.
You can move and shoot if you manage to wrap your hands around the controller.
Yes. This is one of those. Oh, go ahead, Maddie.
Sorry. I was going to say, I tried this version for about like an hour and I was like, I think I'm good. Like, I think I get it. It's just like, it's so uncomfortable to play and you really have to like allow yourself time to get used to these very strange controls.
It looks strange too, because there's like little Peace Walker circles that, you know, that like splash when you trank an enemy or hit an enemy. It's like kind of this weird hybrid with Peace Walker.
They do have the Yoshi dolls, though, instead of the Karatan frogs, which is a fun. It's kind of similar to like Twin Snakes, where they're like, oh, we're going to add some little Nintendo Easter eggs in here.
Yeah, this one, not the most ideal way to play it. You kind of need the Circle Pad Pro to play it. The Frankenstick, as we called it in the press at the time, that accessory, very awkward because you're not going to get a second analog stick without that thing. But it runs at about 17 frames per second. But I guess in 2012, it was kind of cool to have that on your 3DS. But I had just played the HD collection. I didn't really need to play it again on a system that wasn't letting it shine the way it should have. So
I thought there's one thing that I remember people being like thinking is really cool. When Snake loses his eye, the 3D stops working.
Oh, that is nice.
So that's like just like it's so silly and stupid, but it's so clever and funny that it's kind of just like a great inclusion.
I think you just summed up Metal Gear Solid, period.
A dumb little feature that no one will notice, but it's incredibly cool. Or most people won't notice anyways. But yeah, I didn't play this one. And there's a ton of minor tweaks and changes. I'm not going to go over all these. It is funny how they will often bring back the voice actors or perhaps soundalikes to record new audio cues because they're talking about different objects. They're talking about different buttons. And that is happening with a lot of these different releases too. So we also have Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1. No Volume 2 quite yet. So this is just being included for the sake of completeness. So this is just MGS3 from the 2011 HD collection. So that port has now been ported to modern hardware. And there are a lot of issues you can easily mod out. It's not like a pristine port. They did the best they could because they weren't going to port it from the ground up. But yeah, that's essentially it. I'm glad they made this available even though they were working on Delta. It's cool that Konami is so reverent of the original version that they're giving it to you for sale. And they're also presenting Delta in as close to the original as they can with the tools that they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, that's one of my big things with these modern remakes of kind of the real classic games, MGS3, RE4, Silent Hill 2. With this game and with RE4, I'm really glad that the original is as available as the remake. And I think that should be the standard. I wish, like Silent Hill 2, I wish the original had a version on Steam and PS5 and everything. Because it's like, you know, obviously there's the argument, do these legendary games need to be remade at all? But if they are going to remake them, I think you should be able to access the original.
Oh, for sure. And these have some really cool features. If you want to read the screenplay for the entire game, it's here. And it's very, very long. I don't know if there's an option to print that bad boy or export it to a PDF, but it's there if you want it. And I think all the language options are there, too.
This was the first time you could play with Japanese audio and English text. So I think a lot of people enjoy that if they wanted to experience the Japanese voice acting but couldn't speak Japanese. This was the first like official way they allowed that as an option.
Yeah, so no Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 2 yet. I'm just curious from both of you. I don't know if you care that much about Volume 1. I thought it was pretty fun. I thought they got the best possible people to port this, and then they kept working on it and patching it, and it's in pretty good shape now. Of course, we need to have Metal Gear Solid 4 available on a new platform. I don't know if I want to play it or if anyone else should, but I think it just needs to be available for the sake of preservation. So I think that's important. But I am kind of a sicko when it comes to these games. I do want Portable Ops. I want Metal Gear Acid. I want all of the weirdo games preserved in some way. Hey, the Game Boy Color game, because these are all essential parts of Metal Gear history. Do you either of you have like a wish list for Master Collection 2 that seems like achievable by Konami or something that they would want to do? Because right now they're asking, like, what do you want us to do?
They sure are. I mean, I would like
us.
I would definitely like to see 4 re-released. At the time of this recording, Felix and my episode on 4 is not out yet, but It's whiplash after talking about 3 perfect games and just basically gushing. Then we get to have some fun talking about one that is not perfect. But I would like to see it re-released. I guess throw in Ghost Babble, chuck them all in. I mean, the big one. I've never played the Acid games, for example. That's a bridge too far for me. But the kind of tent poles of a Volume 2. Would probably be 4, Peace Walker, and I guess a re-release of 5 and Ground Zeroes. Feels weird to even say that, but that, you know, those are like, even though Peace Walker isn't technically like a numbered title, those are the big ones. And then yeah, just throw in all the other little goodies as well. I mean, Portable Ops, Ghost Babble, whatever.
Yeah, I think tentpole games would be 4, Portable Ops and Peace Walker. I think those are all basically important chronologically. Portable Ops has a really good story. Both the PSP games I love because Ashley Wood did the art for them, and he is kind of underrepresented as the Metal Gear artist because obviously Yoji Shinkawa is incredible and has done most of the concept art. But Ashley Wood did the PSP spinoffs. He also did the comics, and his art is super cool. Peace Walker, yep. I think, is one of the best games in the entire series, and I think it should be more accessible. I love 4. I know a lot of people think it's stupid and ridiculous, and it totally is, but I also love it. Twin Snakes, though. I love Twin Snakes. It gets a lot of hate. I think it is fun and silly, and I would love to see a re-release of that, because that's one of the few that has never been re-released. That's been stuck on GameCube.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, Twin Snakes.
I was going to say the Master Collection, it was also the first time they re-released Snake's Revenge and maybe Metal Gear 1 too, the NES ones, because they included the NES games as well as the MSX games, which is kind of a crazy thing to do, but really cool for that kind of completionist sake.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Portable Ops, because that is kind of a secretly important Metal Gear game that I believe Kojima did not have much to do with, but it is an important step from Metal Gear Solid 4 to Peace Walker to 5, because you can see everything that got better in Peace Walker is introduced in Portable Ops, and then same thing with Metal Gear Solid 5. Peace Walker feels like the prototype for that experience.
Yeah, Portable Ops is ridiculous because you have to, anyone you want to recruit, you have to like physically drag back to your truck.
Yes.
And but Portable Ops has young Roy Campbell, which is like, what was Colonel Campbell like when he was young? Let's make him really hot, and he's friends with Naked Snake, because why not?
Makes sense.
And you get background to Gray Fox. It's a ridiculous game, of course it is, but it's really fun, and I had a great time playing through it even with the janky PSP controls.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah.
The canonicity is disputed because as you pointed out, Bob, it's like not like Kojima's been like not totally upfront about whether or not it counts or whatever toward the main storyline. And I don't think it really matters. But that's one I have not played, actually. I've never played Portable Ops.
Yeah, like Maddie was saying, it can be a bit rough because you have to play it on a PSP, unless you emulate it, of course, which is possible. But it is fun. I played it after I played Peace Walker, so I had the Peace Walker experience. I was able to appreciate it, like what it was presenting for the first time, even though, yeah, dragging a guy all the way back to your truck across a map is not the most fun gameplay element ever. And I'm glad they thought up the Fulton system, even though the Fulton system is in this game. The idea was just sitting there.
Yeah. Do you mean in Snake Eater?
Snake Eater, yes, yeah.
Yeah, they talk about doing it to Sokolov, which I think that would have been a messy ride, knowing his tendencies. But yeah, we were supposed to do it to Sokolov, mm-hmm. put him in a balloon.
So those are all of the versions of Metal Gear Solid 3 that I wanted to talk about. If you explore more, I'm sure there's a lot of other versions, a lot of other releases, again, different regions. But now I do want to talk about Metal Gear Solid 3 Delta. And we all played through it recently, so I just have a few talking points. I think we can get through the next hour, because I'm sure we have a lot of big opinions on what we just played. So in case you're listening and you don't know what this is, Delta is a very, very faithful adaptation of Metal Gear Solid 3, but given a completely modern makeover via Unreal Engine 5. And despite how powerful modern consoles have become since the PS2, the game itself, in terms of design, has barely been touched. So all of the loading zones are still there. All of the voice acting is the same. All of the motion capture acting is the same. Essentially, some quality of life features are added, and the graphics are being made on a more modern level. It is now a much more approachable for the person who was not around in 2004 or not giving a crap about Metal Gear in 2004. It is being presented kind of as a new game.
As far as the motion caption goes, I know they did new face capture.
Okay.
I don't know if they did new body capture, but I know they have people who are like, I was the new face for Snake, so.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was just, generating the mouth movements based on the audio they had, or if
yeah,
they were bringing
so they
new
were,
people
yeah,
in.
Yeah, they would have had to like lip sync to their, because yeah. The audio is all the original audio tracks, apart from any little button things they had to, bring David Hayter in to say, but.
Yeah, I was looking at a few back-to-back videos of here is the original version of the cutscene, here is the new version, and it seems like all of the mocap data was preserved in some way, and that's how they animated the new cutscenes.
Okay.
Yeah, there's new face acting, like people can emote more, the lip sync matches what they're saying, it's not just like lip flaps, even though the original game, it did look very good. That's important to point out. The original game, when it came out, was on the bleeding edge of game tech. It was one of the best looking games ever. It was running barely at 30 frames per second, but we didn't care because nothing had ever looked that good on this level before on a PS2 game.
On a PS2.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not gonna gush, but it is astounding what they pulled off.
Yeah, I mean, well, I have some talking points, but I do want to lay that out that I really like that they are presenting this as here are some amazing graphics, because if you were there like I was in 2004, that's what everyone thought of this game. Like, there are few games that look better than this right now. We are really close to the debut of the Xbox 360 and the PS3 when this game comes out. But as of 2004, right after the re-election of George W. Bush, you can rarely find a better looking game than Metal Gear Solid 3. I'm curious for both of you, we've really hinted at what we think of the game. I really want to know what you think of Metal Gear Delta as a whole, and just if it should exist and why you think it exists outside of the sheer monetary value for Konami. But I'll give my own thoughts, just general thoughts later. But Brendan, what do you think of this game? You just played through Vanilla 3 or Subsistence 3 recently for the podcast, and then Delta. So you have played both back to back.
More or less, yeah. And personally, the financial gain for Konami is the most important aspect to me.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll get that out of the way.
They've got nothing else. Well, Silent Hill, yeah. That's it.
Pachinko. But I'm going to maybe just even for the sake of argument say it does not need to exist, is my position. It doesn't ruin the original game. It doesn't ruin anything. But it doesn't, in my opinion, really add enough to justify existing. I don't want to sound like, you know, I want to be a gatekeeper or to the series, or, you know, go comic book guy with it. But I just found the new elements to be trivial to me. I found the new visuals. Honestly, the new visuals is a lot of people are, you know, very impressed, and they are. I mean, I'm not an idiot. Like, it's gorgeous stuff. I just don't really care about seeing the beads of sweat on Snake's temple playing Metal Gear Solid 3. That is something that personally to me does not matter. I think the original game looks great because it had a distinct style in addition to just being graphically, you know, very sophisticated. It was not trying to be photorealistic. I think something is lost in forcing the game into a more photorealistic visual style. A lot of the characters to me didn't really look so hot. That said, the, you know, controls are obviously more intuitive for a modern audience. And as I said at the top, if all this game does is get people into the series, then I'm glad it was made. I don't want to sound like I'm just, you know, throwing a tantrum that they did it at all. But to me, I blew through it when it came out and just thought none of this really makes me glad I'm playing this instead of the original. It just didn't appeal to me.
And Maddie, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just kind of, I mean, it was fun to play through MGS3 again. I'd probably agree that it's unnecessary, but as far as remakes go, I think it was smart for them to do a one-to-one remake for this, because, like, the RE4 remake, like, RE4 is maybe my favorite game of all time. It's, like, a perfect game for me. And I'm like, why are you remaking this? And then with that remake, they were like, let's do something kind of different. So I had fun with that remake because it's like I still love the original more, but it's almost like I'm playing it for the first time because it's so different. This one is 1-to-1, which I think, you know, for the integrity of the game, that was probably the best option for them to do. I appreciate a lot of people they brought back. The head for this game, Okamura, he has been with Konami since like the 90s. He worked on like Police Knots. He has like a huge history. So I think putting him in charge of it, he wanted to be faithful to the original and faithful to Kojima. And like he said, like, I know obviously there's contentious stuff and of course we don't understand everything, but he has said like, I would want to work with Kojima again if he was interested. They obviously put his name very prominently in the credits. So, you know, they wanted to make sure like, yeah, we know this is Kojima's game. They brought back like David Hayter to do things, bringing back some of the special modes. I think they treated as far as an unnecessary remake. I think they treated it the best they could. I had fun. One of the options they allowed was you can keep your headwear in the cutscenes. So I played through the whole game with the croc hat on, and I thought it was very funny, and it got me a lot of good screenshots and little clips and everything. So I had a lot of fun with that. This was the first time they officially revealed the voice actress for Eva, whose name I can't pull off the top of my head.
But Jodie Benson.
Jodie Benson, yeah, the Little Mermaid. And it was always like suspected, but it was never like confirmed because she obviously, as someone who is working with Disney as a princess, didn't want to have her name publicly on this, but this was like they had her in videos and stuff for the promotion of Delta, which was really cool. They brought back Cynthia Harrell to do a new version of Snake Eater. They brought back what's his name, Kyle something, the guy who did the opening credit sequence. They brought him to do a new credit sequence. So like, again, I think that's kind of my bottom line is like, for an unnecessary remake, I think they handled it with as much care as they could. And just respect for all the people who were involved in it originally and bringing back just some of the fun stuff, bringing back, they had Platinum Games make a new Guy Savage, bringing back Snake vs. Monkey and doing like a new version of that. You know, I think the people who are working on the game, you know, obviously, yeah, it's for money. The Konami executives want money. It's a great money maker. But for the people who are actually involved in working on the game, I think we're very passionate about the game and wanted to make something as that showed respect to the original.
Yeah, I think I might be only a little more positive than both of you on this, or a little more on board with the remake, because I do agree it's unnecessary. What I like about it is it gave me an excuse to play the game again, which I might not have done if this version didn't exist. I also am very happy that it gave me a podcast topic, but also it got everyone online talking about Metal Gear again, and it got me way into Metal Gear again, because, you know, we are in limbo when it comes to Metal Gear. So it's just nice to talk about a series I love, to have more people on board, more people introduced to the series, getting into it, seeing new conversations, seeing new secrets, reading the wikis, just feeling like I did back in the mid-aughts when I was just like knee-deep in these games or neck-deep in these games. And yeah, I guess the only downside to this is there are so many talented people still at Konami. Making something like this does seem like a huge waste of their time when they could easily be making another game. They could be making another Metal Gear game. And I am the one weirdo who likes Survive, by the way. Metal Gear Survive
I
is
know that.
Perfectly fine.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
Oh, is this a sore spot with you, Brendan?
No, not at all. I mean, I never played Survive because life's too short. But if I could be maybe a little bit more like not just dismissive of what they did, I mean, because I want to agree that it's obvious that this was worked on by incredibly passionate people who love the game. I wouldn't want to dismiss their hard work. I think to me, it's more of a criticism of Konami saying, as we've already basically hinted at, let's pump some money out by remaking probably the most beloved game in the series. I'm glad you brought up RE4, Maddie, because to me, I kind of have been interrogating this whole idea of like faithfulness, because that's really the watchword with this remake. Personally, I don't care about the ceremony around the original game, about Kojima himself, about his vision. It's like, to me, if you're going to remake it, And I I'm not criticizing the team. I think Konami gave them orders that they were to piece by piece reconstruct the original. I wouldn't be surprised. But to me, if you're going to remake a game, it's a very hard needle to thread. But the RE4 remake did it. I don't even really. It's not even so much the earlier like RE2 remake. RE4, much like you, Maddie, I said this is so unnecessary. Like this is, I was like offended. Then it came out and it was wonderful. And it did feel like playing the game for the first time. And they let themselves play and they let themselves take some risks. It wasn't one-to-one, not just in the controls or the more modern sensibility, but you would end up in an area and go, I don't know where I am. This is not in the original game. There were new enemies that freaked you out when you first saw them. There were obviously new voice acting performances. I'm not saying you would have to recast people like David Hayter in this analogy, but I would have liked that. I would have liked a Snake Eater that said, what can we do? What potential is there? You know, even like leaving in the loading screens, when I saw that, I was like, oh, this is as one-to-one as I expected. And I think that's what left me wanting. It was, I knew this was going to be the way it was. And I just can't help but wish that they had been allowed to spread their wings a little bit the way that the RE4 remake felt.
Yeah, and I think they were in such a difficult position because they were remaking it without Kojima. And if they changed stuff, people would immediately jump on them. They're like, how dare you mess with this? And, you know, they're already, people still hate Konami 10 years later. So
yeah.
I understand why they had to do the 1-to-1 remake. But yeah, it would have been fun to see something a little different, a little more exciting.
Yeah, I'm also a big lover of that RE4 remake, and I was also just as outraged as everyone else when they announced it. Like, why? I could see the other games, but why this one? It's a perfect game. And then I play it, and it's like, okay, I love what you did here, and it's made to surprise people who love the game and to thrill people who have never played RE4. And that's a great example of going in a different direction. But yeah, like you said, Maddie, Konami could not win with this because they could not go in their own direction. I mean, RE4 went in its own direction. The creators had left that studio, but there was no huge personality like Kojima who defined Resident Evil series. I mean, I guess you could say Mikami, but he was out.
Mikami, yeah.
Sort of. I mean, he's been out for like 20 years now.
And it wasn't like the messy breakup where people still seemed to, it's like, no, you're either on Konami or Kojima's side. You can't be both. You can't like both. And so it's just like a bad atmosphere to be doing this in.
I agree. And I appreciate that they were in that position. It's just, you know, I was looking at the game on its merits.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say,
go ahead, Maddie.
Sorry. I'm just the one thing, cause again, too, we're all like what, millennials, I assume. It is hard for me to also get in the mindset of someone who's like 20 and who's like struggles to play a PS2 game. and so if like you're saying, Brendan, if you're bringing in that audience who wouldn't play it otherwise, that's kind of cool. I'm kind of happy that there's a modern MGS that isn't V, because I'm pretty lukewarm on V. And so to have three, one of the, or, you know, number one, absolute top of MGS, now have a modern game that maybe can kind of take over V's position as the most modern MGS game. I'm kind of happy about that, at least.
And I would say that just in doing the Metal Gear series with Felix, you know, I've kind of poked around looking at whatever, like YouTube and Twitch, and seeing there's just people getting into the series, either because they're young or they're new to these games in general. But some of them actually had played Death Stranding before they even got around to Metal Gear. So they were Kojima heads, but they didn't know his original work. And I thought that was really lovely. And it's why I can't get too, you know, haughty or mad about this existing, because it's great to see people. And they do. I mean, these are streamers, so it's their job or whatever. But they do go back after Delta, or they play Delta in the order of the story or the release, to play the older games that are a little clunkier in the controls. And it hasn't been a barrier, you know, that those older controls, they just needed kind of a push to entertain it.
I think one of the funniest things is how many people within the past, I would say like 3 or 4 years, got into Metal Gear because of Rising, because Rising became a meme a few years ago.
Yes.
And so that became so many, like, you know, like Gen Z, so many of their first Metal Gear game was Rising, which is such a ridiculous entry into the series. but it's like, hey, I love Rising personally. I think it's so stupid and fun.
It's great.
But it's also getting people into the core of the Metal Gear series, which is really cool.
Well, I'm famously not 20 years old or a Zoomer. And the last time I played Metal Gear Solid 3 for this podcast, I thought, I don't know if I can do this again with these controls. I feel like I was so used to modern controls that I was so spoiled. I still enjoyed the game, but it was difficult for even someone who was way into Metal Gear Solid 3 and had played it a bunch to go back to it. So I feel like this game is doing people like me and new players a service. And going back to the justification of this release, I did feel weird in that I wanted to defend Konami in some ways. And that's always a bad sign when the discourse is that toxic, when you have to defend the company. But I mean, to a fault, they are so reverent, they are so faithful, and then you have people pulling out like one screenshot of Snake at a Graveyard from not even the original version. That screenshot was from the HD re-release in 2011 saying, oh, they screwed up the lighting and everything, and then they never bothered to look up the correction. This is a different looking game, of course, but they were trying as best they could to preserve whatever they were working with and present it in a new gloss of paint, with a new shine. And I feel like, to its detriment, that's a major problem in this game. It is too reverent, but it's still not reverent enough for some people. And if you've been around long enough and you know the history of Kojima and Konami, he always wanted to do other things and he was never allowed. So people were also upset. Oh, how dare you make this without him? They made games without him when he was at the studio and he was fired. He was like, let me do anything else. He was trying to quit after every game.
I think a big part of it too is like, even if Kojima was still there, he is so busy. He is working on like 5 projects right now. He is, I'm sure, happier than ever because he gets to work with all his little actors and everything and directors and stuff. And it's like, I think there's this weird like thing where people are still trying to defend Kojima, and it's like, Kojima's fine. Like he's having fine, a great everybody. Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with both of you. And I was going to bring that up, Bob, this idea of all this ceremony and all this reverence, Kojima, every Metal Gear game almost, he said, this is my last one and I hope other people take it and run with it. He said that. He didn't just say, I'm done with it and there will be no more Metal Gear. He is in some interview said, I'm hopeful younger people will take up this series after I'm done with it. So that's not going to change the mind of some rabid psycho of the type we're describing. And I don't like any of that. Either, but to me, in a less horrible world, there would have been the patience and the the allowance for people to go, okay, Kojima was always fine with this idea, maybe I can accept the idea that they'll remake Snake Eater and it'll be different in a good way, and there doesn't have to be this slavish faithfulness to the original. And obviously we don't live in that world, but I think Kojima would have probably, applauded that, if anything, you know, but this is the cult of personality around these things, you know.
Yeah, at this point, I wouldn't mind new games or new side stories. I like Survive. It's a way different game than any other Metal Gear. I understand that. I know why people are mad. But I think if that game had come out after Death Stranding, people would have been more okay with it. Because as Maddie was saying, Kojima's going to be okay. He's collecting celebrities in a big jar in his basement. he feeds them every day. It's fine. Margaret Qualley is doing okay as far as I know. So yeah, like he is getting to do everything he's ever wanted to do. And, you know, like we were talking about, look at the record. He always wanted to leave Metal Gear in someone else's hands. And I hope maybe Delta will make people a little more open to the idea that people can do other things with these games. Maybe after this very, very reverent remake, we can see something else. Or at least...
How is it selling, by the way?
It seems...
I haven't really kept up.
It seems to be selling very, very well. Partially because it is a multi-platform game. It's not like tied down to one console. Like Death Stranding 2, I'm sure it was doing okay, but for now that is a PS5 exclusive, and that is not great for a game sales initially.
Yeah, I mean, then I hope the financial success does exactly what you said. Because if that's the way that the whatever executives or shareholders or whatever feel confident about doing something a little bit more interesting, then great. You know, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, so I want to talk about some of the new features in this and our thoughts on them, because it's not just this very reverent remake. There's some tweaks. They're bringing back some old content that was left behind in other versions. So let's just go over a few of those. Number one on my list here is the return of Snake versus Monkey. Unfortunately, it is Snake versus Bomberman on Xbox. That's your fault for buying an Xbox.
Okay, I was also thinking unfortunately, but after seeing the little Bomberman old Snake doing like the inchworm butt crawl, the impregnating the earth, as Kojima called it, I'm kind of jealous of the Xbox people now, because they have like a little Bomberman MGS4 Raiden. They have little Bomberman Solid Snake. I'm kind of jealous of all their little Bombermans and all their little animations.
Yeah, actually seeing some of the gameplay made me want to play it a tiny bit. Ultimately, I'm glad we got the apes in 4K, but Bomberman mode does look pretty cool.
I think, originally I felt bad for Xbox, but then I'm like, okay, they actually like made this as good as possible they can. And I love Bomberman, but like Bomberman is no Peepo Monkey.
I wonder why they didn't give the monkeys costumes, like Old Snake costumes and Raiden costumes.
Hmm. I guess I played through it,
but
they didn't have costumes in the original Snake vs. Monkey. The Ape Escape 3 minigame, that one had the monkey, the Peepo Snake, the one that was dressed like Solid Snake, and the Peepo that was dressed like Ocelot. The original Snake vs. Monkey was just like standard Peepo monkeys.
And I think the entire intent of that was Kojima's son, I think, was a bit younger at the time, plus he wanted to give younger gamers something to play that was not as violent as Metal Gear Solid 3. But I mean, we're experiencing Metal Gear Renaissance. Maybe we can experience an Ape Escape Renaissance. That plus The Sony platformer whose name I can't think of right now. Thank you, Astrobot. I think Astrobot is increasing Ape Escape awareness.
Well, and he's also in the new Snake vs. Monkey. There's like secret Astrobots who are dressed like the Peepo Monkey. I am a huge Ape Escape fan, and I'm so happy to see. I don't know if they're planning something, because it seems like Peepo Monkeys are like getting. They're like making more merchandise with Peepo Monkeys. There is like a gacha with Peepo Monkeys.
I won this giant one in Japan last year from a crane game.
That's great.
Right behind me.
being a huge fan of the original Snake vs. Monkey. I just played through the Delta version yesterday, and it's just charming and adorable. One of my favorite things about it is like they have like 20 different like poses that Snake catches the monkey. So he'll be like holding it by the ankle, or like putting a box on it, or like hoisting it up. And so like every time you catch a monkey, you get to see one of these different animations, and it just seems like they really had a fun time with it. So when we were talking about like letting them play a bit more and letting them do something that's not exactly like the original game, I think this was one of the playgrounds they got to have, and they seemed to really enjoy it. And I had a blast with it. It was just adorable and fun.
It's definitely fun. The smile he has on his face has been in my nightmares since playing it. But I agree. It's you know, this is where I obviously I'm not going to complain about what they've brought back and what they've allowed people to experience again. The apes are good.
Yeah, well, it's always in the original one too. This is such a weird one, because it's like it technically seems to be Solid Snake, because he's like talking to the Colonel and talking Campbell about Otacon and stuff, but it's just the naked snake model. So it's like, I don't really understand who this is.
Yeah, we need an entire Snake versus Ape campaign to really fill in the blanks here. Maybe it was before Shadow Moses. There was some other mission. It could fit into the continuity. So we have Snake versus Monkey. Other returning features, we have Secret Theater, full of goofy bonus videos, like I said earlier. Instead of just being pre-rendered low-res videos, these are all made in the engine, and they look amazing. Unfortunately, you do have to unlock these as you play through the game by shaking down certain people. Oh, Maddie, go ahead.
I haven't gotten to these yet, because you have to like hold up all the people to get them. And my understanding is they remade all the original ones, and then I think they have a couple new ones as well, which is cool.
I didn't realize that they remade the old ones, because the thumbnails, when I scrolled through, the thumbnails looked like the original game. I'm wrong about that. And there are two or three new ones that are in the Unreal style. It sounds like, despite our fandom, none of us are psycho enough to have unlocked all of them yet, so we don't actually know. But
I only unlocked one, and I did watch that one, and that one was remade in the engine, so I just naturally assume all of them would be, but maybe I'm incorrect on that one. But if so, that's a real bonus.
I think the one that automatically unlocks is a new one they did. Because there's like three at the top that have like the little triangle after them, and then I think underneath is all the original ones.
Is that the one where Sokolov does a laser beam with his hands and destroys the... That was funny. If that's a new one, that's they're cooking.
I like that one. Even though there's no new voice acting, it's fun to see. So we have Secret Theater and The Return of Snake's Nightmare, now more fleshed out by Platinum Games. And now you can play this from the menu after you finish the game. And it's not just you in one room. It's very, very simple gameplay. They fleshed out for you to be in an entire graveyard. There's boss enemies. There's more moves. I don't think Platinum Games spent more than a week on this, but still, you can feel there's a little more going on than in the original, which was just them wheeling out a prototype that was never used for your play.
It is fun. I think one of my favorite things about bringing back Guy Savage is that you got to bring back the codec calls that were associated with it, where if you call if you call paramedic after, you talk about all the Draculas and stuff. But my favorite one is when you call Sigint, he tells you this dream he had about this like basically like a Metal Gear made out of shit, and how it goes and has shit missiles and turns everything into shit. And it's like the most ridiculous codec call. For some reason, they censored it to crap in the remake. I guess maybe just to keep the rating down or something. But it's maybe one of my like top three codec calls in the entire game. And I was so glad to get that one back, because it is just, it's kind of the epitome of how ridiculous Metal Gear can get.
Yeah, there are a few. I haven't gone over all of these changes, but there are just a few added words here and there, a few omitted words, not just for the sake of censorship. I believe, like, paramedic, when Snake calls her, they're always talking about movies, and one of them is Godzilla, and I think she says, oh, I wonder how many more of these there'll be in 40 years, because the game takes... You're buying the game and playing it 4 years after the events, and now it's been 60 years. So they had her come in and, I guess, just say 60, and I guess that was worth their time. I don't understand the intent of that, but sure. They're paying people.
Yeah, I mean, because the original call is like a wink saying, you know, there was just a Godzilla movie that came out, so they are still making these. So they wanted to, I guess, which is cool. They wanted to say, hey, now it's 2024, not 2004, and they have made yet more Godzilla movies. And I actually didn't even totally notice it while I was playing. But of course, that had to have been new.
Yeah.
That was neat. That was neat.
And the quality of life features really make this game sing and make it worth playing. So quick access menus for the codec and the camouflage, autosave on every screen transition. If you're trying a non-lethal walkthrough or playthrough, or if you just want to try to redo a room you screwed up, this is really great. Although it does kind of make it so you don't actually have to use the real save if you don't want to. You could potentially miss a lot of conversations, but I like that this is here. It does feel like a nice modernization that doesn't really trivialize the gameplay. It just lets you try again without any sort of time investment.
One of the best things they added is from the pause menu, you can see your current stats. So if you're going for a no-kill run, you can see, because it's like I dropped a guy on an electric fence on accident, and I'm like, does that count? And you can like check in the menu and see if it registers as a kill or not, which is really good. That's a great quality of life feature.
Yes, I did like that. Oh, Brendan, go ahead.
Oh, I was just about to say, I mean, you know, I guess from my opening statement, I'm lukewarm on these additions, but I will say the one I did really appreciate was the camo wheel. I didn't really use the codec wheel or pop-up menu that much, I'll say. It just feels natural. I actually don't even see the point of it, to be honest. You just click a different button. But the camo wheel was fun to play around with just on the fly. Mm-hmm. And I probably did end up getting a lot more conscious about wearing what I wanted to or how I wanted to than I would have in the original menu.
Yeah, it was interesting because when I went from MGS 2 to 3, one of my biggest complaints was in MGS 3, you spend so much time in menus, whereas MGS 2 basically has no menus. And this one cut down the menuing a little bit. Like, obviously, you still have to go into eat to the cure menu and stuff like that. But adding, like the quick camo and stuff kind of cut down the menuing a bit, which I think is good. It did take me a while to get used to having your guns and items on the D-pad, because I was so used to having them on the triggers. And so I was like, I kept like hitting the wrong button, and it kind of took me a little to get used to it. But obviously it's a well-designed control scheme, but when you're used to the original, it can take a little bit of adjustment.
Yeah,
I also appreciate that they let you program your own controls, like format your own controls, because I made it Phantom Pain controls. I don't know why. I was just like, I'm not going to press circle to crouch. It's not going to happen. So that is also neat. And I do appreciate, I mean, this is where, you know, obviously it's hard not to appreciate the care taken in a remake, is all of the ways that they accounted for what you might want to customize and what you might want to do. I mean, I guess if you're going to do a remake, this would be an area where they really could have, if they were lazy, you wouldn't have had all this stuff. But they really poured, you know, every option in there that I think is impressive and helps the experience a lot.
Yeah, all the gameplay changes I like are things that feel like they would have added if they had the hindsight in 2004. Mm-hmm. Like these quick access menus, the auto saving, the way you move around Snake. It's still kind of modular. It still feels a little antiquated, mm-hmm. but it's a little smoother than the original. And I do like the crouch walking carried over from Metal Gear Solid 4 and the 3DS version of this. So some other things that are changed are the fact that you can now skip one line of dialogue at a time in the codec calls. Previously, you either listen to the entire codec call or you skip the entire codec call. There was no middle ground, which is crazy, but that's just how the codec calls worked for the first three games. Presumably the fourth game, it's been a very long time, but this is a very nice change.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a bummer if you ever fumble while the wonderful Lori Allen is in the middle of, you know, a heart-wrenching conversation with Snake, and all of a sudden it's dead silence, and you either have to reload it or just say, "Well, I guess I'm not going to experience that." So that was obviously like a really smart thing to tweak.
And the next edition is for the real sickos out there, because the original game had the 64 Keraton frogs. Those are still here, by the way. And now you have 64 Gakko rubber ducks to find. And if you really want to make the most of the game, they're out there. And a lot of them are in that motorcycle sequence with Ava. And that's when you want the autosave.
And they have their little camo on. So I was trying to find one in the end area. Not the end, but the end when you're fighting the end. And like you can use your like the microphone, the directional microphone, to help you find them, and you can like hear them. And even though I was like finding on the directional mic, I'm like, I have no idea where this is, because they're, you know, covered in little leaves. So they're really hard to find. But so for people who don't know, the Keraton and Gakko were created by a branch of Konami, this toy division called Von Trauma, I think. And they're just like kind of mascot characters that this toy division of Konami made. So it's like Konami's like, we have the rights to these. So it's like, you can put them in the game. And Gakko didn't show up until MGS4. He's like the little clock that Sunny has, or the little egg timer. So I love them. I love the designs of Keraton and Gakko. So I was happy to see them bring back Keraton and also add in Gakko.
Yeah, I guess the downside is if you shoot the Gakko ducky, you will hear a baby noise for the entire room, unless you get far enough away from it, I guess. So yes, none of us are that sick to actually seek all of these out, thank God. But they're there if you want them.
Eventually, but not the first playthrough.
But this makes it a lot more achievable than in past Metal Gear Solid 3 releases.
Yeah, and again, those are something you can see on the pause menu. There's a little checkbox because there's one in each area. And so there's like a little checkbox if you found it in that area or not, which is great.
So a few other changes here. One of them is something that Brendan messaged me about when I was talking over Delta with him. And that is bullet drop, which is taken from Metal Gear Solid 5. And initially, this made me think I was going to hate Delta. I eventually got used to it. But because they can simulate physics, you're going to have to recalibrate how you fire the Trank gun, especially if you're going for that non-lethal playthrough, because there was no simulating the movement of the dart. I assume the original game just said, you're targeting the head, it's going to hit the head. Here, things can get in the way. It's going to drop over time. So you cannot just dominate the game with the Trank gun as you could in the past.
Yeah, I mean, the controls are easier to get around, and therefore, you know, I complained about it. That's what I DM'd Bob. I was mad because I heard about bullet drop. But I will say, like you, Bob, I got used to it, and I do think that While I don't think it was entirely successful, they did a lot of things to try to balance the difficulty of the game, given that there was now crouch walking and an easier way to shoot. So in the old game, I don't think it's too easy that there's no bullet drop, because it's takes time to shoot stuff, and you have to really line it up, and you don't just, you know, go into Leon Kennedy mode. I will say, this is maybe my one annoying Psycho fan complaint that I'm just going to say, is I didn't mind the bullet drop at the end of the day, but I did mind the new sound of the Trank pistol. It was like metallic and clanky to me, and I really missed that original that the original game just felt so satisfying. I know that's insane, but I thought about it the entire playthrough, and I just don't, I don't know if I understand the decision to change that to this big clunky sound on my beautiful Trank pistol.
Well, you know, yeah. If I had just played the original game before the remake, I would have a list of grievances, and they would all be related to tiny sound effects or texture's
wrong.
I'll
be reading them at the end of the I'll be reading my list at the end of the show. I'm interrupted.
Bonus content.
That's how I was with the Mario RPG remake, because that was the enemy sounds were so in tune, and I was like, how dare you change the battle sound of Snapdragon? What are you thinking? But the only issue with the bullet drop is during the motorcycle sequence.
Yes,
I can't deal with Eva's crappy driving and bullet drop at the same time.
You're just moving fast.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, this is a separate issue. But I was about to say something about Eva that I cannot believe they didn't. Maybe they tweaked it, but I didn't feel like they did. But I mean, why not? The escort mission bit. I was kind of. I know it's faithful and all, but even with that, I thought they would have changed it a little bit. I was still as frustrated as I always am. The fact that it was still, I think it's still infinite spawned enemies, right? Which is like the most annoying thing about that section. I was kind of baffled that they didn't change that a little bit, because no one, I don't care how sick they are and how much they worship Kojima, no one would have complained if they had fixed that section a little bit, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just, it's so bad, because, and they like keep spawning behind you. And it's like, Eva's just like, she just keeps getting stuck with them spawning behind her. And you're like, all right, Eva, good.
I get it.
Have fun.
A branch went through your torso. Get over it. Why are you moving so slowly?
If you wander more than 10 feet away, she's like, where are you? I don't know where you are. it's like something I forget about in the game every time I replay it. And suddenly Metal Gear Solid 3 has monster closets where just infinitely spawning guards. Normally it's okay, there's this many enemies in the area, I can take them out, but it just changes the rules too much for what you're used to. And it does seem like a poorly designed part of the game, especially when you're ready for it to end. That finale is just so long.
Yep. I was like, give me a Leon and Ashley. I know I keep invoking RE4, but it is one of the best remakes in recent times. But the way they tweaked it in that game, you know, where the cover, the Ashley system is, I think, better than in the original.
Mm. Oh, for sure.
Or at least just more dynamic and less of a headache. I was almost ready for them to do that, but so that was a bit much bigger deal than bullet drop. As it turned out.
So I did want to ask both of you, I assume both of you have played Twin Snakes more recently than I have, which was 2004. So I know, Maddie, have you played Twin Snakes? I can't remember.
Yeah.
And Brendan, did you play it for the podcast series?
We didn't play it for the series, but I have played it. I still have my old GameCube. And I'll tell you what, this is real. This is an embarrassing thing. I played Twin Snakes before I played MGS1 proper. I think Felix told me to do that, actually. So I'm going to blame him. But I played it many years ago at this point, though.
Yeah, and I wasn't, I mean, it's been a very long time, and I'm not sure if you, either of you have any ideas, like, how that compares to this in terms of being a remake, because when I played Twin Snakes, there was a lot of discourse back then, too, about the game. Oh, they ruined the game, and yes, the addition of the first-person shooting did make the game very, very easy, and the Trank gun. But there were also some complaints like, oh, they made the cutscenes too crazy, and now we're standing where we are and have seen what Metal Gear has done to date. And you're like, well, not really. He kind of just he kicks flips a missile, big deal. I don't see the big deal here. But yeah. Do you have any thoughts on Twin Snakes? Because that, for a lot of people, that is the non-ideal remake. And for a lot of people, this is the ideal one.
Yeah, Twin Snakes is so interesting. It's so silly. And it is way easier than the original, because it took the MGS2 playstyle and put it in the original game, which was a completely different playstyle. So it is very easy, which I can understand people who complain about that. I think it's fun. A lot of people complain about the voice acting. It was all redone, but that was also like a really cool thing that David Hayter like did it out of pocket because he wanted to bring the whole cast back. I'd only played it through MGS1 once, so like I couldn't notice a lot of the intricacies of the voice acting that people who had played through it tons of times saw. I think it's fun. That one is interesting because that's one that Kojima worked on, and Kojima was like, don't make this faithful, make this crazy. And they did, and there's like people have like different like kind of fan theories about Twin Snakes. One of my favorite ones is like it's Otacon's retelling of MGS1, so that's why Snake is like super cool and doing like backflips off of missiles and stuff.
I like
it's
that.
Really cute.
Well, he still leaves himself wetting his pants is what I like about that.
And he's like really weird looking in that one too. It's like oh, he has such low self-esteem. But I think Twin Snakes is fun. Like, it's a remake that did its own thing, and that's more similar to like the RE4 remake, where it's like, I love both of these, and I love them both because they are different. And it's like, it's such a different experience that I can like kind of hold them both in my heart, where it's like one doesn't take over the other. I think Twin Snakes gets a lot of unnecessary hate, but I think it's a good time.
I would agree that I don't quite understand why it's hated at this point. It's pretty far from the quality of the original, I would say, just as an experience. Like Maddie said, they didn't balance out the game with the new controls from or play style from MGS2. But I mean, it's okay. I don't have any passionate feelings. Like the cutscene, the Kitimura cutscenes are what they are. The main thing that I really don't like in it is the new music. The music in the original game is pretty much perfect. I love every track in that game. And then you get this Tommy Tallarico ass music in the Twin Snakes, just like, you know, techno bullshit that just smothers the atmosphere of that kind of cold, lonely Shadow Moses thing. And you just get like, it's just like, this is not how you should have done this. But yeah, I mean, I would also echo what Maddie said, that it did a little bit of what I'm complaining this game didn't do, which was it kind of went its own way, and Kojima encouraged it. And it is cool to see the first game sort of rendered in it, you know, with more triangles, even though, that's one thing I wanted to ask. I don't know if you were going to ask about it, Bob, but sure. I mean, what do you guys feel about the new visuals in Delta?
I like them. This feels like there's a lot of discourse going on. I did not play Metal Gear Solid 3 right before playing this, the original version, so I'm going based off of my memories. But in my memories, this is kind of how I view the game in terms of Delta. It just delivered what I assumed it would look like at this modern scale. I love all the character designs. I thought they upgraded them in a way that made sense based on their original models. And I think it is a very good looking game. I have no complaints about that. And I was just happy to see something I love presented in a new format. That's just my own take on it.
For me, So I'm not super into like how everything is hyper-realistic graphics nowadays. I think all games kind of look the same now, which is a little boring. MGS3, I would say, went for like 85% realism. And I was actually expecting to be a little more off-put by having, because like the original English dialogue is over the top. It's campy, and it fit really well with the mildly cartoony visuals. I mean, one of the big ones I think of is when Snake looks through the binoculars and he has like this big goofy smile on his face, and it's like not a realistic looking person. He's like very cartoony. And I was expecting to be kind of weirded out by hearing the voice lines with the hyper realistic graphics, but it worked out better than I expected. It's a good looking game, but visually it's not anything unique, so it's like not interesting to me in that way. It doesn't have a level of art, I think, and that's like a criticism of basically all modern games. I think there isn't a distinct art direction in games that I notice. Everything is hyper realistic, so you don't see any differences in anything, basically. It's like they all look like they could be made by the same studio. It's kind of like whatever for me.
Unreal, more like too real. because I would say this is actually my least favorite aspect of the remake. It is obviously a good looking game. I mean, the jungles look gorgeous and et cetera, et cetera. But I missed the original most of all in just what I was looking at. And I'm sorry, but I felt like the voice acting didn't match the visuals. It took me out big time. I understand some characters looked better than others to me. But I actually felt like in some cases it really backfired, like the boss. Most of all, it bummed me out because in the original, what was kind of stoic and steely about her is now just like kind of dead eyed and sort of emotionless. And I think it was, I'm sure it was a tough thing to try to, again, balance this faithfulness with a, you know, grasp on these new tools. But I felt like everyone kind of looked like Disney animatronics of the characters. You know, it was a little uncanny to me, even though the actual gameplay. Yeah, I mean, it looks gorgeous going through these jungles and stuff. But it's one of the big reasons why, you know, this was a whole remake, you know, event, is that you were going to see the game in a new light. But I don't know. Having also played Phantom Pain recently in Ground Zeroes, I think they were far more successful in taking Metal Gear and its characters into a more photorealistic style in those games than they were in this, I would say.
Yeah, even though I like their designs in Delta, how it looks in general, I have been watching a lot of footage of the original release of MGS3, the PS2 versions of that game. And there is something that I think I miss about the limitations that make certain artistic choices necessary that was really appealing about that era of gaming. And I can always go back to that. That's still available. Thankfully, the HD collection release is available. But I think I am just still kind of tickled by the novelty of seeing these characters that are just in my mind in this new fidelity. Maybe that is very superficial of me, I don't know, but it was very novel. And I saw people saying things like, oh, Ocelot looks like Handsome Squidward now. And I thought, Ocelot is a weird looking guy. And I feel like they are starting with weird, bizarre looking characters. So you're going, when you upscale them to 4K, when you design them for 4K with really high polygon models, you are going to come out with a weird looking character on the other end, I think, naturally.
Yeah, well, like with Ocelot specifically, I think they changed his model to look more like the child who would turn into the Ocelot we see in MGS4 or MGSV. He has kind of more of the distinctive features. Like, he has a really distinctive nose in those games, and they kind of tried to model his face a little closer to that, because in the original he is just kind of like little baby face. Like, who could this possibly be? So I think some of those choices were interesting. Like, you know, if they are making this in realistic 3D, I think, you know, at least kind of that, those style of choices is interesting to me, at least. I think Volgen's skin was really interesting because obviously in the original it's just kind of a flat texture, and his scarring is like really gross in this one, which I think they did a really good job of like kind of accurately rendering these really kind of this horrifically scarred face that he has. So yeah, you know, as far as if you're going to do hyper-realistic graphics, it looks all right.
Yeah, and on that note, one thing I wanted to cover before we end the podcast, the fidelity that we're experiencing this game at now, the fidelity of Delta, 4K, HDR, high polygon models, everything looking stunning, did this change the way you played the game? For me, I feel like it made certain things about the game easier. Everything was easier to see. And I feel like there is no way around that. There was something about the original SD presentation that made enemies get lost in the grass, in the trees. It made things like the end boss fight a lot harder. The fear, the fury, those boss fights were a lot harder in SD at 480 interlaced because the resolution can only show you so much information. I feel like I blazed through the end boss fight. I blazed through the fury boss fight because they were just so visible in these worlds compared to how invisible they used to be. I'm not sure if either of you had that same impression. And like enemies too, they really stand out because everything is just so bold and beautiful and presented in such high resolution.
To me, it wasn't so much the visual aspect that made the game easier. I played it on extreme, but it wasn't so much the new visuals. I just think the tweaks that were made to the game made it easier. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was actually kind of a bummer, for that reason. I will say though, cause I know I've been very negative. I want to throw in that I was really, it was a treat that they changed the CQC for, like the CQC openings, and triggers for Volgan and the boss, because I love doing, you have to CQC Volgan, but I love playing that final boss fight with just CQC. And I was ready for that grunt that Snake makes and therefore, you know, to hit my CQC button, and it didn't come. And I had to learn what the new openings were. And it was, this is a very micro version of it, but it was that feeling of playing it for the first time almost again. That was really fun. So I kind of went off topic there about the visuals, Bob, but I felt like most boss fights were easier just in general. I mean, like the fear is like a joke in Delta, basically, unfortunately.
Yeah, the new CQC animations in the final fight against the boss are like beautiful. They're really cool. It's hard for me to gauge difficulty because I've also just gotten a lot better at Metal Gear since I originally played MGS3. When I played my first, I like posted my stats next to each other, like my original MGS3 run through, I killed like almost 200 people because I like just like hadn't quite gotten into the groove of how the games work yet. And now it's like after playing through the whole series, I'm just like, oh, I know how this works. So yeah, I'm not sure. It's a little tricky for me to judge the difficulty difference.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was the case of me having played this game so much or the increased level of fidelity making it so much easier to get the visual information I needed to play the game better. But yeah, we're almost done here. I want to know from both of you, do we have any hopes or dreams for future Metal Gear Solid remakes in this style? Konami sent out a survey. They want to know. They're like, hey, we're out of ideas. What do you want to see? Do you want to help make the game? Come on down to Konami. I want to know what you guys have to say about this, because I have my own ideas about what I want to see from Konami after this.
For a remake, I feel like portable ops would be up on my list just because the limitations of the PSP made it kind of crappy to play. So I think that could actually do really well with a remake. I think if they did like Metal Gear 2 or Metal Gear 1, I think that would be really interesting because that would give them so much more creativity to like work with, because that's like, you can't just one-to-one remake this. You're working from a very basic 2D game to a high fidelity 3D game. So I think that would be the most interesting choice. MGS2 is my personal favorite. I think it's perfect. Leave it alone. You don't need a full remake of that. I don't need to see Solidus in HD. It's fine. And yeah, it's because, yeah, it's like we were talking before about like a collection. And I think MGS4, I think Peace Walker could be a lot fine with just like a straight port. But as far as a remake, yeah, I would say like Portable Ops or like Metal Gear 2.
And Brendan, how about you?
I mean, if we're going to do remakes, which is where we are, you know, in the world, like I would go make Metal Gear 1 and 2 one game and have that, call it Metal Gear 0 or whatever, Metal Gear Solid, you know, X. And I think it would, as Maddie just said, it would be an actual, you know, opening to get really creative and to build something from the ground up. And it would give people for the first time ever in the Solid series the narratively quite satisfying, you know, moment of the two sagas of Big Boss and Solid Snake finally colliding, which is just off camera the entirety of the Solid series, which is sort of funny. And David Hayter's still around. You know, I'm sure he'd love to do it. I don't think they're held in as much as I think they're great games. I don't think they're held with the same reverence as 3 or 2 or 1, you know, so there would be less of a preciousness about it, or hopefully there would be less of that potential for outrage or screwing with Kojima's vision. I don't think anyone has that attitude toward the 8-bit, the 8-bit games, yeah. Except for me, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I had the same similar idea, Brendan, because the Metal Gear 1 and 2 are considered curiosities, even though they're so important to the series. People are not really going to go out of their way to play them unless you're listening to Retronauts. Then sure, you're going to go out and play these games. But otherwise, you're going to say, oh, they're these extras, and I guess they're kind of weird 8-bit games. I don't really care about these. Yeah, presenting them in this kind of a style, while only embellishing a little, I don't want to see these turn into 20-hour games each. Like, make them each a 5-hour experience. Do what you need to do to make these ideas work in a 3D environment. But I feel like this is a very important part of the big boss story. And like you were saying, Brendan, it happens off screen. And then when it's on screen, it is 8-bit theatrics. You're not getting the voice acting or the complex writing you were getting in future games.
Yeah, you're getting wah-ha-ha-ha.
Yes.
I'm going to blow the
wall. A lot of
which
typos,
it's cool. I mean, I'm not complaining. It's just very different. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and MGSV retconned stuff from Metal Gear 1 and 2. I'm going to go into super spoiler category here. But when the original Big Boss is the same in Metal Gear 1 and 2. You kill him, and then he comes back to life, which I think is really cool. And then MGSV came along and was like, no, they're actually two different guys, which I think is stupid. But
me too.
A lot of people like that lore, so they could rebuild the retcon lore into the Metal Gear 1 and 2. And, you know, I think people who are fans of MGSV would appreciate that a lot.
You know, we're in really deep now, and I want to know from both of you, was V only made to explain that plot hole that, well, how did Big Boss come back to life? Well, we made an entire game in 2015 to explain that.
Who knows? I mean, I'm not even done recording with Felix about 5 because it keeps going so long that we have to break it into two sessions. But I'm with you, Maddie. There's a lot I love about 5, but I am not down with that game's story pretty much at all. I love Ground Zeroes. I think comparatively, Ground Zeroes is a better game as far as what it's trying to do. But 5. There's just a lot of problems, and it's like the big problem with that, and I will shut up because I know we're trying to end the show and we don't need to go on about Metal Gear Solid 5, but the big problem is like it kind of explains a loophole or whatever, or a plot hole, but it changes basically nothing. It doesn't matter that Venom was in the first game. It doesn't matter at all.
Right.
Like it's completely trivial. So I think Kojima was doing it, I don't know, his theme about memory and identity and stuff like that, less than it was about like going back to the MSX games to say, oh, here's why Big Boss was alive in the second one. Who knows?
I think he wrote it around songs that he wanted to put in the game.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah, I think ultimately we learn that Kojima is not as reverent towards Metal Gear as the hardest core Metal Gear fans are. So, you know, we were saying it earlier, instead of doing a remake, just go ahead and make another game. It doesn't have to be Survive.
Yeah.
What is Solid Snake doing in Alaska? Could there be a dog sled management game? You can race your own dogs.
50
raise
huskies,
them.
Man. Yeah. Bring back the 50 huskies.
Snake versus Husky. I mean, and there are ideas that were in the bin that, I mean, I guess you probably couldn't do this if you weren't Kojima, because again, you'd be back to square one with the outrage. But, you know, there were a lot of time periods that they thought of. I mean, I think at one point there was an idea of playing as the boss in World War II. I mean, again, probably only Kojima would be allowed by the community to do that particular idea. But you could go back to a lot of different places and not even necessarily mm-hmm. play as Snake or Big Boss. You know, you could be Liquid in the Middle East. You could be Ocelot or whatever. I mean, I don't know.
You can be Solidus feeding gunpowder to Baby Raiden.
You can see how the pain met his bees.
That's the one we're all, well, you know, that was a parasite, Bob, from the lore we learned in MGS5, another absolutely useless piece of lore that changes nothing and makes me annoyed. But yeah, if we got a full game on just being the pain and like having to minimize the amount of agony you're in at all times, like finding little bottles of lotion and putting them on, I'm fine with that too.
Sure. So I guess ultimately our thought on Delta is, meh, sure, why not? Can't think of anything else to do right now. Play Metal Gear Solid 3 again. That sounds fun. So, that's been another Retronauts, everybody. Thank you for joining me. Thanks for listening. And let's go around the room here and talk about where we can find you folks online. Let's start with Maddie. Maddie, where are you?
You can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky, Oh That's Raspberry. Also, website, ohthatsraspberry.com. You can find an archive of all my silly Metal Gear comics. I also have a Patreon, patreon.com/ohthatsraspberry, where I do a video game theme postcard and sticker sheet every month. And I also work at Grasshopper. We have announced our new game, Romeo is a Dead Man. You can wishlist it on Steam. Please do so, because they will give me brownie points if we get more wish lists.
Very nice. And Brendan?
I am the co-host and producer of Blowback, which is a history podcast. We got our new season out yesterday, as of this recording, about the Angolan Civil War, the Cold War showdown in Africa. We're really proud and happy with how the season came out. So go to blowback.show if you'd like to sign up and get the whole season ad-free right now. And if, as Bob mentioned, if you like Chapo, Trap House, and Metal Gear, or one or the other, go listen to the new miniseries I'm doing with Felix about yet more Metal Gear. And we will go through every single main title of the game, 1, 2, 3, 4, Peace Walker, and Ground Zeroes and 5. I think we may do a bonus episode about Rising. I don't know if we've decided that yet, but who doesn't love Rising? And we're having fun with it. So if you enjoyed... I'm less negative in those ones as well, most of the time. So if you enjoyed this Metal Gear chat, there's more over at Chapo's Patreon.
And this, of course, has been Retronauts. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/retronauts and sign up there to support the show and get a ton of bonus stuff. For just $5 a month, you can get all these episodes a week ahead of time and ad-free. You'll access all of the bonus episodes. I believe there's over 200 to date. Or perhaps over 100. You can do the counting. I'm busy hosting a podcast right now. So check it out at patreon.com/retronauts. And you can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd, other places as Bob Servo. And also my other podcasts are all on the Talking Simpsons Network. We've got Talking Simpsons. We've got What a Cartoon. And a ton of other bonus podcasts at patreon.com/Talking Simpsons, like our Futurama podcast and our King of the Hill podcast. So if you enjoy hearing me talk about video games, it's possible you'll enjoy hearing me talk about cartoons. And that's been this episode of Retronauts. Brendan, before we go, can you give us a little bit of Solid Snake?
Sure. Trying to think of one of the things he says when he's done eating, because those are my favorites.
Oh, my favorite one is what does he say? This works when he eats something.
I'll do that, and then I'll do my favorite. So you've got the little ration noise, and he goes, "Hey, this works." Then there's, I think, my favorite one is he eats it and he goes, "I want some more." Because he's just really into that calorie, mate.
And with that, we'll see everybody next time.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.